Welcome to The Unconventional Path, entrepreneurship and innovation stories and ideas. I'm Balaam Usitz.
And I'm Mike Wasserman.
Hey, Mike, today's guest on the podcast is Robert Corey. Robert has held leadership positions in the finance industry as an equity derivatives trader, portfolio manager, corporate strategist, chief operating officer, and private equity investor. He is also the co-founder and CEO of Agile Rainmakers, a high-impact business development consulting and advisory firm based in Chicago. But the real reason I had him on the show is he recently wrote a book titled How to Intern Successfully. And in my interview with him, we focused on internships and how to make them successful both for the intern and the company.
This sounds cool, Bela. And I think longtime listeners might remember that I have been a business school professor for the last 25 years. And so internships have been a part of my world for a long time, but in a little different role from a matchmaking perspective, right? All of the university I teach at right now, all of our students are required to have an internship, some sort of internship experience. So a lot of time I spend, listening to students, what they're interested in, and trying to use my network to help them at least get in touch with people that might be able to give them an internship. So fascinating for me. Let's get right to it.
Robert, welcome to the podcast.
Bella, thanks for hosting me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. So let me lead off with my first question. Robert, if you're at a social event, a non-work-related social event, and you get introduced to someone, and after that introduction, they say to you, oh, very nice to meet you, Robert. What do you do? How do you answer that question?
Well, I let them know that I advise high-growth companies on how to manage their growth. And along the way, I've developed an internship program where I hire interns just about every summer, train and develop them, and set them loose on some client projects.
Excellent. That's a good response. So talk a little bit about your business. What's the name of it? What do you do?
Yeah, the company is called Agile Rainmakers. And what we do is we typically work with smaller, high growth potential companies that are interested in managing their growth in a way that's sustainable and culturally healthy. And in doing so, we'll provide whatever advice is needed. My experience is quite diverse. I have started, built, and sold a recruiting company. I've been the chief operating officer of a $200 million hedge fund. I've worked in high frequency trading as a senior vice president of strategy. So my experience is broad. I've seen a lot of different things. And so when an entrepreneur approaches and has needs, I can provide advice, my partner as well. We can provide advice on navigating issues and helping them cross the chasm from early adopters to full-scale deployment. And so I advise high growth companies, and I do it in a way to ensure sustainable long-term growth of the business. We're never thinking about things transactionally. We're thinking things holistically and long-term.
Very nice. So one of the things you mentioned was sort of crossing the chasm, right? Kind of getting from spending the money that your investors gave you for growth to spending the money your customers give you for growth. What's the biggest one or two things or challenges that you see companies coming up against in trying to accomplish that?
With the clients we've worked with, a lot of times it's literally the messaging. How do they communicate what they're doing so that folks see the value of it? And that messaging oftentimes requires very good sales skills, which they may not possess. Oftentimes, I find founders of companies, they're so in love with their product and their knowledge, that they are so wrapped up into it, they're not putting themselves in the potential investor's shoes or the potential customer's shoes. They're so wrapped up in what they have. And so that I think that's maybe the biggest challenge is, setting yourself aside and putting yourself in the end user or in the investor's shoes to say, what do they want? How are they looking at it? And one of my clients is a cryptocurrency client. I met them, there were three people, today they're about 30. And I was at one of their retreats, and they're developing some incredible stuff, right? And I asked, you know, well, when you approach an institution, what's their concern? And they start talking about all of their own concerns. Oh, is it fast? Can I do this? Can I do that? And I said, no. When you approach an institution, that person over there, they're concerned about career risk. They just, if they go with you and they
That's right.
So it's things like that. And once they get, oh, okay, well, if it's career risk, then we got to make sure this thing is, you know, super safe, secure. We got to, you know, we got to shift our priorities a little bit. And then we know I can help them sell when the time comes. Does that answer your question, Bill?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you brought up a great point. Oftentimes people who are selling, particularly when it's maybe an enterprise level sale or, you know, some piece of software or product that's sort of critical to your customer, they don't really take into consideration the risk the decision maker is making by switching what they're currently doing and going with you. And oftentimes they view the decision maker views that as a career risk, just like you said, right? It may lead to their demise if they make the wrong decision. So I think that's just an excellent, excellent point you brought up for particularly for if you're selling something that's displacing an existing product that your customer is using, right? You're coming in with something new, better, faster. Man, you know, you really got to convince people it's worth taking that risk because everybody knows there's risk associated when you change things.
Absolutely. It's putting yourself in their shoes to see how they're viewing the risk, even though you think there's no risk.
Right.
And it's also, Bella, one of the reasons I really love working with interns because they come in and they've got beginner's mind. They don't know. And so they're asking questions, you know, and like it's so fascinating. So, for example, I'll give them something to do initially. And, you know, when you're in college, if you have a math problem and the answer is two, if you have two, whether it's in fine print or it takes up the whole page, you get full credit. Well, in the business world, you have to put yourself in the shoes of your manager or the client. And so the first project always comes back. It's hardly readable. It's like the answer is there. You know, you can see it. Specifically one time they wrote a little visual basic code and they gave it to me after a couple of weeks. And this was literally it. Press the button. That's all it was. Just press this button. I'm like, you mean to tell me I'm just going to press like what files that need to be set up? You know, what happens if it doesn't work? All of this stuff. And it was all like brand new to them. And it was new because they had never put themselves in someone else's shoes.
Right.
So lesson goes not only in, you know, advisory business, but working with new hires, new interns.
Yeah. So that's a great transition. So what caught my eye when I got your background is that you've written a book about internships and how companies can make internships successful for the company, and also how interns should be looking at internships and how to make them a successful career adder for them. So talk a little bit about your book. What's its title? Where can people get it?
So the book is called Intern Management: Principles for Designing an Exceptional Internship. And it's available only on Amazon. And the book basically is taking down the whole idea of an internship into nine basic principles. And those principles are transparency, harmony, empathy, buoyancy, respect, intentionality, discovery, generosity, and empowerment. And throughout the book, one chapter is, you know, each chapter is dedicated to one of those principles, but they all weave together. And ultimately, what we're doing here is we're bringing dignity to the internship discourse. And I say that, you know, there's dignity in being very transparent. There's dignity in empowering the student or intern to do the best they can where they're interested. And how you have dignity in this is you prepare, you think way ahead. And again, Bella, as we started, you put yourself in that student's shoes. If I were coming in as an intern, you know, what might be on my mind? How might I want to join the firm for the, you know, summer, winter, whatever it is, what I might be thinking of? And I'll give you one little thing, anxiety. Students today, I'm sure you see this yourself with the students you work with, there's tons of anxiety. And how do you, so now you gotta think, okay, I would rather they be productive than anxious. What do I need to do as a manager to alleviate that? And so one of the things that I do whenever I have an intern that I know is going to start in June and they've accepted the offer in January, I say, great, we're going to talk every 6 to 8 weeks for 30 minutes until June. And I want to hear how school's going, how you're doing, how are your activities. And I want to share with you what's happening at Agile Rainmakers and the projects you may be working on. And I let them know the interviews are over. You're coming. And this is to, you know, build that relationship. Well, for an investment of 60 to 90 minutes, when they show up in June, there's already a sense of relationship. The anxiety is lower. They know I'm on their side. I want them to win. And the name of the game is get as much done as we can for Agile Rainmakers, our clients, and have a lot to talk about in your interviews and putting on your resume afterwards.
Yeah, you know, what you're talking about there is really both the company and the intern sort of making an investment prior to showing up on day one, to making sure that when you show up on day one, that you're not anxious. There'll still be anxiety, but you'll reduce it. And this notion of being productive and sort of setting the stage. And so, I mean, what makes people anxious? It's the unknown that makes people anxious. So what you're doing here is you're reducing that number of unknowns by starting that relationship and starting to engage with that person. That's a great way of thinking about it. If you look at internships in large companies versus, let's say, smaller companies, are there differences in how companies look at those?
I think for many large companies, they look at it more as a recruiting tool rather than anything else. And, you know, they focus more on juniors in college so that they can, you know, look to potentially hire the ones that are a match for their culture, or they have the certain competency they're looking for. That to me tends to be where the larger companies focus, and rightly so, because, you know, they've got to hire quite a few people and, you know, they want to always reduce their risks, and, you know, that's fine. Smaller companies, on the other hand, may be interested, like I'll hire freshmen, I'll hire sophomores. I'm interested in getting some work done. I'm interested in cultivating a relationship with someone who's a future leader, you know, somebody who's going to, you know, get out there and make something happen. It informs me of what's going on, not just when in colleges, but informs me, like, what are the latest technologies that are being used? How are people thinking about things? How can I improve how I'm working with my own clients by seeing how the interns work? So for me, if it's a freshman, a sophomore, a junior, I'm okay. You know, and that's, you know, that's me on a small business looking more at, you know, not am I going to hire them or not full time, but can we get some work done? Can we learn a few things together? And can we make it a memorable, positive experience? That's kind of where I'm looking at. And I think a lot of smaller companies may think about it that way too, it very differently than larger firms.
Yeah. As you mentioned, lots of times large companies have almost formal internship programs. They have a whole system and a process for recruiting and selecting interns. And I know when I worked at IBM for a number of years at IBM Research, we clearly used internships as a sort of recruiting process, because we hired almost exclusively, you know, juniors or seniors, people getting ready to go to grad school. So as sort of that, we get to know you, you get to know us, and we often hired several of those people on a full-time basis once they graduated. Now, the question I have for you is, for a small to medium-sized company, what's the best way for them to find interns?
So I think a lot of universities, local universities, are, you know, they have the resources there in their career services where you can tap into them and you know, find talented, you know, individuals. But it's also, though, and this is obvious, you know, there's, you know, your clients, your vendors, your suppliers. Right, they all have kids in college, you know, so there may be some that you ask, you know, hey, you know, anyone that you know, familiar with, interested in interning or anything like that. So, you know, there's lots of ways to do it with, you know, local universities, colleges, and also with the folks you already do business with. They either know folks or have children that would be interested in interning with you. So those are a couple of ways, but then there's also the standard, you know, putting out a posting somewhere to, you know, on a job board to say, hey, we're interested in hiring an intern for the summer, and, you know, please, please apply.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that's a great point about your customers and your suppliers. They're often a great source of all sorts of connections, whether it be interns or future employees or other relationships. And we often don't think about tapping into that resource that we already have in our business and those connections we already have. That's a great place. It's a great, great suggestion for thinking about reaching out to them to say, hey, we're going to hire two interns this summer. Do you know anyone that might be interested?
Yeah, there are lots of resources right in front of you, and I think it's tremendous. And you know, there's tremendous opportunities in that. But here's another resource that I think folks may not think much about: your former interns. So a lot of my interns, because we develop a relationship, I treat them really well. They learn and grow. They literally, you know, love it. I was just back at my alma mater, Princeton, and I had a dinner and I invited seven former interns to come. Six showed up for dinner. And we had an incredible conversation and opportunity to reconnect with each other. And I'll ask them, you know, who is a year behind you that'd be interested in interning? And these are high quality folks that come in because they, you know, we have a relationship. They're not going to send me someone
right.
They don't succeed. So that's just another resource there. And it also speaks to designing an internship that has folks go back to college talking about what a great opportunity and experience it was for them. I cannot overstate that, how important that is, not just for a recruiting, but also long-term, because that student is going to remember that experience. They're highly impressionable, and they're going to remember it for 30, 40, 50 years. So I want them speaking as highly about Agile Rainmakers and the opportunity to intern here as possible.
Yeah, excellent point. So when you think about various different assignments that are appropriate or efficient or effective, whatever the right adjective there is for interns, how do you sort of think about, okay, this would be a good project for an intern to do?
What I will do is I'll talk to a client and think about how can we right size the level of difficulty for the interns. And one of the things I do, Bella, is I'll hire five interns. They'll be a team, and those five interns will work on five client projects simultaneously, so they can lean on each other too. And I make sure that team is diverse in terms of, you know, some have computer science, some have marketing, some have finance, etc. Now, given that, going to a client, looking for where are their projects that they would love to get to that they never get around to that we could do during the summer? Or where are their projects that would help them grow if only they had the time to do the extra research or the extra legwork that for whatever reason they don't have the resources to do? So some examples might be, sometimes it's a customer survey. You know, when's the last time you surveyed your customers? Oh, we've never done that. We've been in business 15 years. Well, why don't we do that? So the interns will figure out how to do a survey and how do we take that data from the survey, present it, and then say, here are some actions to take, and then take those actions. So that's one possibility. Another might be like with the cryptocurrency client, researching some competitors. How do their protocols work? And that's pretty detailed technical work. You got to dive in there and go through things like Etherscan, etc. That takes a lot of time and coding ability, etc. Well, let's take that, get that research done, and put it in a presentable format so that the client can now, you know, make some business decisions based on what they're seeing, you know, and understand something that they just would love to understand, just don't have the time. So it can vary. It could be we had a biotech client that wanted to do research on where are the best clinical research facilities in Eastern Europe. And so there's a database that has that. And, you know, they went through, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of possibilities in Eastern Europe to help our client go through the clinical test phase. So what I do is I, as you know, those 60 to 90 minutes, I'm learning what these students are capable of, what they're interested in. Simultaneously, I'm talking to clients and I'm right-sizing, I'm honing, I'm getting a good sense of the projects that they'll do, make sure they're interesting, make sure they're value add, and make sure that it, you know, that's something they can accomplish, and then off we go.
Do you have thoughts about bringing in interns multiple years? I mean, particularly if you're looking at people who are, you know, freshmen or sophomores, to bring them back for a second or third term internship at your business?
Yes, they're always welcome back. And I had one intern, my very first intern, he did a great job. And a few months later, after he was done, I mean, he did an incredible job. It's one of the reasons I started writing books about it. So I reach out to him, you know, during the school year, I'm like, hey, you want to come back? And he goes, ah, Robert, I don't think so. I've got this other internship and they're going to pay me $16,000 for the summer. And I was like, well, you know what? That's just a little above my budget for my business. You should take that other one. Good luck. Well, COVID happened that summer and he calls back and said, hey, they're not doing it anymore. They've made it now a 2-week thing. Can I come and intern with you the rest of the summer? Absolutely. So he comes back and I had two other interns at the time. They made a great team. Off we go. Then he had a full-time job making a, you know, like his junior summer, he's got the, you know, he's all set. His senior summer, he's all set. He's got a full-time job. And he calls and says, can I come back and intern with you again before I start my my full, you know, so happy that he wants to come back and he's doing good work and he views what we are doing highly. And I'm open, right? I understand these are 18 to 22 year olds, right?
Yeah.
This is the empathy. So there are anyone of them, you know, look, if you have an offer, it doesn't come through, come on back. And these students, they're going to places like, you know, Morgan Stanley, they're going to Deloitte, you know, they're going to, you know, some big name places afterwards. Oh, and one last thing, that intern said to me, Robert, I got this great summer internship because I was able to talk about all the stuff I did with you.
Sure. Yeah, it's cumulative, right? Yeah. So let's switch hats a little bit here, and let's talk about from the intern's perspective. What are sort of tips that you give college students who are thinking about doing an internship? What should they be looking for? What are sort of a couple of hints and tips you can share with them?
First tip is set up a Google alert with the word internships. And then every day you'll get an email that has, you know, whatever, 10, 20, 30 articles where internships are mentioned anywhere on the internet. And start reading those regularly. Why? Open up your mind. Too often, and this happened with me, you get fixated on, you know, a handful of great companies. Oh, I want to make sure I'm with MBB, right? McKinsey, Bain, and BCG. Well, okay, but there's a whole other world of consulting out there too, right? So it's too easy, especially in college, you know, like to get fixated on just a few. Well, set that Google alert, see what's out there, open your mind. You know, the odds of getting an internship at a place like, let's say, Facebook are 1 in 100, okay? The odds of getting an internship on Wall Street are 0 if you're applying during your junior year for a junior summer, because applications are due by typically April 10th. Of your sophomore year for your junior summer, right? So, you know, seeing these things, raising that awareness of what's out there, how things work, where you might fit in would be extremely important. So that's the first tip. Second tip is find out what your parents' friends do, find out what your friends' parents do, find out what alumni do in your school, you know, and go at it with an informational interview approach. Curious, learn. Don't go looking for in a transactional way, do you have an internship? No, okay, bye. You don't want to do that. You want to build a relationship. Bella, you and I both know the world of business is a huge game of musical chairs. And folks do something today, 5 years later, it's something else, but they remember who you are. So build relationships over time that helps. So that's a key piece, build relationships. The third thing I say, and I could go on, but I'll give you this, read independently. This, you know, if you have two resumes come across your desk, all right, and they're exactly the same, except one of them has a second page. The second page is an addendum, and the addendum is a list of titles of all the books that have been read about your industry. So they've demonstrated, you know, they've read 15 books about manufacturing, and you're a manufacturer. Ooh, mm-hmm. That's easy. So I always say, read independently, always have a book in hand, so that you're developing knowledge that's uncommon, that'd be useful, and it also demonstrates interest.
Yeah, yeah. And you bring up a great point, because if you're applying to specific industries, you know, each industry sort of has its own jargon. It has its own sort of words and terms and the way people talk about stuff. And sort of knowing a little bit about that in advance as a potential candidate, and then when you have that conversation with the hiring person, you know, right away, they're gonna say, oh, this person understands a little bit more than this sort of average person who doesn't know much about our industry. That's a great point.
Yes, and it's also why the book, Intern Management, the subtitle is Principles for Designing an Exceptional Internship. Because every year there's over 1 million internships, and they happen in, you know, municipalities, they happen in business, they happen in, you know, it could be law firms, it could be, you know,
sure,
nonprofits, right? And there's no like one internship fits all. But if you think from principles and you design it in a way that's got dignity front and center, then you have something. And if you're a student thinking about it from relationships and learning and growing, then you're going to succeed.
Excellent. Excellent. Hey, Robert, this has been a really interesting conversation. Is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you, or you'd like to share with our audience before we wrap up?
Yeah, Bill, you mentioned I've written a book, and that's true. I've written Intern Management, Principles for Designing an Exceptional Internship. And that book is actually the second book in a 4-book series. The first book is How to Intern Successfully, Insights and Actions to Optimize Your Experience. So the first book is for the student, so the student can have dignity for themselves, get out of their own way. Students today don't self-reflect. They're not self-aware. The book helps them figure out what they like, who are they, where they want to go. And I think that's crucial if you want to find the right internship, but also succeed once you're there. So there's How to Intern Successfully, then Intern Management for the manager, and together they can support each other. And then the third book, which will come out next year, is about mentoring interns. What are the conversations that you have with them to make sure that they're empowered and they're, you know, doing the best they possibly can? And then the last book is one no one thinks about, and it's just so important, Parenting an Intern. That intern goes home to their parents. What happens there? Also, should a parent, so how much support should a parent give their college student in terms of finding an internship, et cetera. I've had over 24 interns. Every internship ends with a survey of the parent of the intern. Want to know what they're thinking and how it goes. And I assert that with the 4-book series, then any student who's interning can succeed if everyone involved is reading these books and pulling for that student to do well.
Super, super. I'm glad you mentioned all of those. All of that information will be in the show notes. And I think you said that these are available only on Amazon?
That's correct.
Okay, excellent. Robert, it's been a real pleasure chatting with you. I really enjoyed our conversation. I hope our paths cross again in the future.
Likewise, Bella. Thank you so much.
Bella, that was a really interesting interview. I kind of had 3 big takeaways, I guess, from the conversation with Robert, 2 kind of from the student standpoint and 1 from the hiring organization standpoint. And first that, you know, one of the things that I've seen is that internships are often obtained through networking, right? Knowing somebody that you can talk to, and this idea of having an informational interview first, even before maybe you've applied for a position, and then you use your network to talk to somebody about, hey, I applied for this. Let me learn something about this. Let me ask you some questions about how I can best prepare for a career in this field, so on and so forth. And what happens is if the person, especially if you've already interviewed, if the person who you're talking with is impressed by you, they can actually go to HR and flag your application. And this gets you automatically to the top. And if you know anything about applications at large companies, for sure, it's a piece of software that's looking at resumes and then kind of ranking them based on some algorithm that may or may not be accurate or biased. And individual people through these recommendations can flag people to kind of jump the line. So that's a really, really good strategy. And you know, as Robert mentioned, you know, using family and friends. If you don't have family and friends, use LinkedIn, use the alumni connections from your university, ask your professors. There's all kinds of things that you can do. And then find out where they are and contact them using that mechanism, whether it's LinkedIn or Instagram or a contact form on their webpage or whatever it is, right? Find them and ask them for a short informational interview. Tell them why, even tell them a few of the questions you're going to ask. And I have found that not always, but more often than students expect, they will they'll get a positive response. People will take some time for students.
Yeah. You know, Mike, as you're saying that, it reminded me of my very first job. So when I was a graduate student, I was on the graduate council and I was somehow labeled a student leader. So when the board of trustees would come to town, they would always have a dinner and they would invite some student leaders to the dinner. And I got to go to a dinner with the board of trustees and the president of the university and, you know, the deans and all that kind of stuff. And I happened to sit next to this person named Art Bika. And Art Bika was a member of the board of trustees, and he ran all of GE's R&D organization. And I hadn't even thought about applying to GE, but, you know, we're chit-chatting and we're talking back and forth. And he's telling me some of the things they're doing there. So, you know, I'm a little interested. And he hands me his business card, right? And I promptly put it in my pocket. And the following day, when I have some time, I send off a letter of interest, I'll describe it, to the GE R&D, to their HR department, to say, hey, last night I had dinner sitting next to Art Bika at the RPI blah, blah, blah trustees dinner. And he suggested I write to you and give you my application and background. A day later, I got a phone call. And, you know, and another 2 days after that, I had an interview. And so it was this notion of cultivating the field somehow. Because it's so noisy out there. And this is, you know, there was no computer looking at my resume then. It was a person. But the fact that it had sort of been lightly endorsed, I wouldn't even use the word endorsed, but at least came from Art Bika, right? It moved it to the top of the list. And so anything that this that you can do is great. And I think one of the great values of internships is that many companies use internships, as should the intern, as sort of a trial period. You know, it's like you're dating each other for 2 or 3 months and you're saying, okay, is this a good match? And should we think about doing something full time?
True. And just to date ourselves, if maybe there's some newer listeners out there and who aren't watching on YouTube, who are listening to it on, you know, on Anchor or whatever through Spotify or Apple or wherever else you're listening to, we are two old men. So when we were doing these internships, we were typing them on a typewriter. Some of our younger listeners might have never used a typewriter, even know what one is, but yes. Typewriters put an envelope and a stamp, and that's how you communicated. When you called, you made a call, you pulled the phone was on the wall and it had a cord attached to it. And you had to fight your parents and your siblings, you know, to use the phone to make this call. But yeah, I'm kind of joking a little bit, but it was a different world. But the same thing holds true now. And you're just using LinkedIn right. to make those connections or Insta right. or whatever social media you're using. I mean, I'm actually an old fashioned letter might be an interesting way to set yourself apart. I still occasionally get thank you notes in paper from students yep. or from employers or something. And that is pretty cool. We had a guest on the podcast, actually. Remember who did the customized right. Thank you notes that were automatically generated in your right. own handwriting. But I don't want to get us off track, but This idea of networking is super powerful. And whether it was in 1968 when we were around, or, you know, 2024 right now, I think the advice is totally solid. The second piece of advice that was really important, I think, from him, and it was tucked in there, was his advice about reading. And to me, I wouldn't care if it's books that you read or articles that you read in like Harvard Business Review or Fortune Magazine or Fast Company or something cool like that, or even that you saw them on social media if they're reputable kind of sources, right? That to show that you're reading. Reading is so important that you know something about the company and its industry before you apply, that you know the key issues that are facing this company, whether it's technologies, whether it's their competition, whether it's key elements of their market, their customers, right, or the products and their services that they're offering. It can be fine if it's like negative and problem things, like, hey, I read this, it's negative, right? What are you doing about it? And this will give, you know, a really nice way that you can have a conversation with people about this, and it shows you stand above a lot of the other applicants because you've done your homework. So I think that was the second piece of really good advice. And then the third side is on the company side. And I, you know, at my age now, you know, you and I both, Baylor, we have a lot of friends that are in the position to hire interns, right? They're gray hair, right? And near the tops of their organizations. And some of them say, oh, I'd like to have an intern. I just don't have the time to supervise it. The value isn't there right now. I've got to have my hands full. And I just want some of those people who might be thinking that right now to reconsider. And to me, there's not all internships are the same. And to me, when I see people that really have good experiences with interns, like what Robert was talking about, that it's really about recruiting and selecting the right individuals. So you're going to find the right mix of students that will take this job. It's about having some sort of, doesn't have to be a real formal learning program, but you have a plan for them to learn, to pick up kind of the knowledge and the skills they'll need to do the tasks that you want them to do. And I guess maybe a step before that, you have a set of tasks, right? It's not just to sit and watch and shadow or to make coffee, that you're like, hey, here's these 10 things that in this 20-week internship, I want them to do. And then you have this learning program that gives them the time. Now what you set yourself up for is the right people with the right outcomes and the right path to get there, that this will kind of make sure that there's clear benefits both to your organization and to the interns themselves. Now, this kind of formula isn't always 100% effective, but I find when these elements are present, the hit rate kind of for the satisfaction of both the employer and the student goes way up. So that's kind of my takeaway. This is what I heard. Oh, hey, look at that. Fireworks. That's cool. I didn't do that. It did it itself. Technology. But I don't know. That's kind of my sense on this. And you've had some experience in this world too, Bela. What are your thoughts and what are your big takeaways?
So a couple of quick thoughts. Number one, I'll say, particularly when I worked at IBM Research, we had a pretty formal internship program every summer and every year. And we clearly use that as an interviewing process because we hired 10 to 20% of the interns as full-time employees. And sometimes these interns would come for multiple years as interns. So, you know, they had a formal recruiting process to go to universities, find interns for the summer. And it was very much used as a hiring filter, if you will. And the other great thing about it is if you've been an intern for a summer or two at a company, and then you come to work there full time, you're hitting the ground running at a much higher speed than the brand new employee who's never worked there. So there's residual value in this, not just if you go to work for the company you intern at, but any other company, because you gain industry knowledge, you sort of start, you know, you understand how things work, and each industry has sort of its own vernacular and its own way of doing things. And you get exposed to that because you never get exposed to that at the university. So I think that was one thing.
Yeah, really well said.
The other part that struck me is I'm just paraphrasing what you said, is that really be clear on why you are doing the internship. Have clear goals, both if you're the intern and if you're the company, and be able to articulate those when you go on an interview and ask the company, hey, what are your goals for these internships? Why do you do them? What are you looking for? And be clear about why you're doing the internship. So I just think that's important. And the other thing is, I remember this from my IBM experience, we always tried to come up with a project that would be doable in the 10 or 15 weeks or however long the internship was, so that the intern sort of had something they could take with them and put in their portfolio and say that, hey, this is what I did last summer when I was an intern at IBM, whether they were, you know, telling an IBM and division that, or whether they were telling somebody else. So the other thing we always try to do is not to give them things that were confidential that they couldn't talk about. We wanted them to be able to talk about their experience. So we wouldn't put them on a project that was confidential. We would try to carve something out that they could sort of take with them and include in their portfolio.
And brag about how cool.
And brag about. Absolutely.
That's how you get the next good set of good students the following year. Brilliant.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So those were a couple of things that I thought about.
Brilliant. Yeah. And you know, when it doesn't work out, this is okay too. And I have a lot of students that get frustrated. I'm like, no, this is great. It's like dating. You want to find out that you didn't like this person that you went on a date on after the second date, not after you've bought a house together and had three children, right? You know? So right. It's kind of it's okay to find out what you don't like from the student standpoint. And also from the employer standpoint, it's not every employee that you hire works out either. And again, this is a low investment, low risk. And if, you know, one out of four doesn't work out, that's still a pretty good success rate and still worth it. You know, don't let one bad experience, you know, as long as it's not anything major, right? Kind of ruin everything. But, you know, I really do think there's a return on investment, both for big companies, you know, like you were talking about with formal internship programs. I think they get that. But I think lots of small businesses can really benefit from this as well. Nonprofits, community organizations, you can be really creative with how you define an internship. And I've talked to some people, they're like, I work for a community group, right? And they wanted to know if I had some students that could help them with a project. I'm like, well, why don't you offer it as an internship? If you structure as an internship with a little bit of pay, certain amount of hours, you're willing to sign a contract on that, the student can then count that for their internship. And they were like, really? Right. I'm like, we're not a for-profit business. I'm like, it doesn't matter.
Right. Right.
So there's lots of room to be creative. So I think that, you know, kind of my kind of last point is every university that has a business school, or whether you're in healthcare or science or whatever it is your business does, where students need internships. And there's usually a career center there, and the career center, not all universities have one, but that's a good starting point. So just search for whatever the university in your town is and career center. And that's, I think, a really good way to start. And they'll be able to help you structure the job description. They'll be able to help recruit the students for you, so you don't have to do it. You'll tell them what, you know, your needs are and what your interests are. And they'll usually be happy to kind of add you to their portfolio or their roster. Sometimes they'll have a day where you can come in and actually meet students and do some short interviews to make it easier for you, so you can do it all at one time. And they all now have online tools that you can gain access to. Some of them want money, but I think if you're a nonprofit or a startup, maybe I shouldn't say this, but maybe one of the dirty little secrets of this is some of these things can be negotiated, especially if it's right. Your first time. So that's my advice, I guess, for on the business kind of side, that, you know, you can really get some help on this from a career center at a university in your region to kind of fast forward the process a little bit.
Yeah, I want to emphasize the point that you made there, Mike, is that internships are not only for large companies. Even Robert said that, right? When he did his very first intern, it was just like two or three people in the office. So if you have a small business, don't think that an intern doesn't work for you. It could bring great value to you, even if you're a small 3, 4, or 5 person business. And again, it's a great way to sort of interview people. It's a long, extended interview. So don't think about it as only for large companies. Think about it for any size company, whether it be for-profit, not-for-profit, any type of organization can do these types of internships.
Yeah. And I guess now I don't want to pile on too much, and I want to keep an eye on the time, Bailab, because, you know, I don't like to bore our listeners. But another kind of thing that is what you said reminded me of is I had somebody said, well, you know, everybody goes on vacation this summer. And I'm like, well, wait, it doesn't have to be in the summer. I mean, some programs it has to be in the summer, but we have all kinds of programs where year round they can get an internship. Sometimes right. It doesn't need to be full time. It can be 6 hours a week and still count, not for every program, right? But for some. So there's probably more. So if you have this kind of mental model that it's only for 3 months in the summer, over the summer break, that may not always be true. And so it's worth it to ask if you have a different idea, which would fit with your business, with your seasonality, with your budget, with your, right, how many hours a week you have time to supervise. And usually if you're working with a flexible school, you've got, you know, a lot of room for kind of tailoring the internship to what fits your needs as a small business owner, or somebody who works for a nonprofit or a community group, because one size doesn't necessarily fit all.
Yeah. And not all schools require internships. So the ones that don't require internships have even greater flexibility, right? I've had internships. I've had people intern for us that did 5 hours a week for like a year. Mm-hmm. Right. And we called it an internship. And they loved it and we loved it and it worked out really great. So don't think about it only in those terms. And don't think only about universities. Think about community college. Think about high schools.
Sure. High schools. Yep.
Right. So don't think about this as, oh, I got to go to some, you know, 4-year university to go find some interns. There are great, smart people at all levels that you can get that can get value out of the internship working with you and for you. And you can get value from them. So I think that's great.
This reminds me of a podcast episode we did a long time ago with the guy who worked with the homeless population in Schenectady, was it?
Oh, Schenectady. Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, again, you have to match the right jobs with the right skills, but there's all kinds of people who maybe are down on their luck or can use a hand, you know, and that some, and not in every company, in every situation, but there may be some internships where you can really do an amazing amount of social good, not by helping some kid in college, right?
Right.
But by helping somebody else in your community, that this may really be, in all honesty, a lifeline. There's a whole other set of issues there, but, you know, again, riffing off your play here on be non-traditional about this, Bela, I think there's lots of ways that you can look at this to match your needs for your business with what's available in terms of resources in the community and really do make a difference. It's a, you know, a win-win for sure in these situations.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, Mike, what do you think? Time to wrap this one up?
Yeah, thanks for another interesting entrepreneurial interview, Bela. Listeners, again, thanks to you for joining us today, and hopefully you found this conversation interesting and thought-provoking like we did. If you have questions about what we've discussed, or hey, if you're looking for some interns in Germany where I teach, right, please get in touch with us. Our email is bela.ann.mike@gmail.com.
And please do hit that follow button on your favorite podcasting application. We always enjoy people who follow the podcast. So signing off from upstate New York. Until next time, see you soon, Mike.
It's great, Bela. Thanks again. Always great to see you from over here in Münster, Germany. We'll see you next time.